On this day, on the 7th of October 2014, the Dons came from behind to beat Franchise 3-2 in the EFL Paint Trophy when it meant something. A goal from Adebayo Akinfenwa with 9 minutes left set up the victory. Come on, you Dons! Anyhow, we're the same old Wombles. We're back.
It might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome. Today I'm joined by Adam Proctor and mon frère, Niall Cooper. We are going to look back on the last two matches, which have ended in 1-0 defeats. Both different. Both slightly controversial, though, to be honest with you. And yeah, a bit dodgy. And we're gonna pick up a bit on Newcastle. I think I want to have a chat about that and that relationship there. We're gonna have a chat with Knight about how fair game can help, because I think there's some misunderstanding there. And we're also gonna reflect on last week, because this is our chance really to have a look back on last week's podcast we have with Chris Stewart and Charlie Talbot, and have a think about that, and you know what that going down to 50.01 represents, because that's what it is now. It's not 50 plus one, it's 50.01. Anyhow, before we get into that shenanigans, how are we all? Adam, how are you doing? You're going to be the one feeding back on the Salford
yeah,
game,
of course.
But before we get to that, how are you getting on? You're right.
Well, it's the start of term, so it's all a bit insane. So I'm sort of in a bit of a blur. We had an open day as well, so I'm kind of a bit like, and yeah, we've had to record this straight after my long, full-on day with final year students. So I'm awake, and may make just as much sense as I always make. Basically, not much.
Yeah, I've not noticed any difference so
exactly.
far, Adam. But I think I'm probably in the same space as you, so we're all cool. Niall, how are you getting on?
Well, apart from the fact I can't get my, not that it matters because this is all audio, but we like to see each other and I can't work out how my video is not working. So I'm just like cursing the computer in the background. I will try and make sure it doesn't affect anyone and nobody hears me cursing. But otherwise than that, all right. I did have my COVID jab the other day and I have to say that every single time I've reacted awfully to it. Pro-vax generally. Though the consequences, I normally spend at least a day feeling really shit, and that's what happened. But I'm over that now. And then then we had the Salford game, which just doesn't help at all. But that's where we're at. But
I love that you've had to come out as pro-vax now. So I was hoping we were all beyond that, but you're probably right.
I'm pro-vax.
Pro-vax. Oh dear me, what a few days. I've got to have my jabs coming up soon, to be honest with you. And the one thing I think about the technical thing, like getting the camera to work, I remember in the old days before COVID, if ever there was a problem with IT or whatever it is, there would be someone you would call on that would come down and fix it. But now, I mean, I'm having to hold so many hybrid meetings and stuff like that, and things don't work. Whatever you do, there's something that doesn't work. There's always someone on mute. There's always some sort of crap going on that's not connecting here, or someone can't see there, or whatever it is. And you'd call someone down. Now you've got to fix it yourself. I was in a meeting this afternoon, and that was like it took literally 10 minutes for people to hear what was going on in other screens. Anyhow,
yeah, I won't even.
This is irrelevant.
Totally irrelevant.
Irrelevant ranting.
I mean, I won't even talk about the fact that I am now an extension of the Home Office, and it destroys most of my start of my sessions every week as I attempt to get students to scan QR codes for the Home Office, which is wonderful. I really enjoy working for them.
Wow, that sounds a bit dodgy.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully, well, no, it's a fact. Oh. There's nothing dodgy about it, and I'm not breaking any confidentiality. Yeah, I think I'm safe.
Right. Well. Okay. All right.
Get him. Get him now.
Okay. Well, listen. Let's do this in reverse. Let's go Salford first. So. I think because we'd had such a good run at the start of the season and we gave Newcastle such a good game that when it came to Salford, I think most of us were genuinely thinking this is like a guaranteed 3 points. But it now it does seem to me like, and I didn't notice this in the first few games, but we're set up to defend, and then hit on the break. You know, that's the thing. So we sit and we sit and we absorb it all, and then we hopefully we take our chance, but hopefully you don't get suckered in. And it feels like that's what happened. So Adam, you watched it through. Was that the general impression? What were you
I
thinking?
think so. It was pretty boring. That's the problem. I was kind of just so bored by it. I missed a bit of the first half of the second half because I just was like, oh, I'm not going to rush back. I went out for a walk and was like, okay. It was just a bit dull. But it was a bit, I guess I was just frustrated then because it was dull and I was like, okay, I'll watch it because we're back and, you know, I'm going to get to see us, you know, in real person next week. Yeah, it felt like we lost. It felt like we definitely lost 2 points by the end of it. We should have got one, you know, I think. But at the beginning, I thought, why are we? Yeah, we should have had three. So it wasn't that exciting. It was a £10 wasted, to be fair, I think. But you know, yeah.
I think the two big moments, well, three, I think, is the tackle on Joe Lewis, which I looked at it looks awful, and that was just a yellow rather than a red. I mean, it was high and awful. And then the second thing is following on from that, the guy who made that tackle, who shouldn't be on the pitch, sets up the goal. And then there's another moment. I can't work out in my timeline. I think it's before that, where there's a clip where Bugles headed the ball and it's clearly gone over the line. And yeah, and obviously we don't have goal line technology, and the linesman wasn't up with play at that point. So it just feel, I mean, I think if you take it abstract as I have just then, I feel really robbed. And I'm trying not to get angry because it is the thing when you have a defeat, Niall, you know this, you have the same feelings. When you have a defeat, it's sort of like pisses up your day. Oh,
He can't even get
yeah.
his
So
mic
that's
working now.
he can't even get his mic working now. So, but it's just it was just
The door
frustrating.
went right. It's Jen. She's just back from being away in Scotland. So, you know, there's a reason for that.
I was dis he's back again. I was just saying, now our football ruins your weekend.
Always.
No, it does. It's so annoying. And I just kind of.
Most laconic answer I've ever had from
I wouldn't have been
him.
so ruined. I wouldn't, yeah, I would, it wouldn't have ruined me. So I would have been annoyed. And then afterwards, I would have watched more of the replays. But it did ruin it more because I've sat there and watched most of it, thinking this is a dull game. And yeah, the ball over the line, I mean, that was so clear. I don't know where that, I mean, I haven't watched any of the extra highlights, so because I haven't had time. But I don't know where the lino was, but like, the only place he wouldn't be able to see that was if he was still on the halfway line. Surely, like he must have been quite close because it was way over. You know,
Yeah, I mean, it just the video clip just looks, it just looks awful. I just it one of those things that really annoys me. And then obviously it's fucking Carl Robinson, isn't it, who's
yeah, he was
their
getting a bit.
manager.
He
It's
was
just
getting a
like,
bit of stick, obviously, which was good fun. You know, there's about four or five
yeah.
hundred Wimbledon fans there, which is great. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
Anyhow, so that you know, that was a, it just left a bit of taste in my mouth because great start to season, but unbeaten for that period of time. Great game against Newcastle, and you thought we were going to push on from this. But yeah, I mean, I'm still really excited about the home game, mainly because, you know, with those three games that were postponed, it's just I'm hoping that we do our best to fill it out, to be honest with you, and that, you know, if Carlisle don't take their allocation, then we can get more seats, as we have done a few times this season. I think it should be a cracking atmosphere, and hopefully, you know, we get back into winning ways. But now going back a week, then we had the Newcastle game, and again for me this is a tricky one because I think it'd been great if it was at Plough Lane because to have them down there and the Newcastle fans would have been giving it large, and I just think that'd have been brilliant. And then obviously we lose. And it what I think the frustration is with that particular defeat is there's the first challenge, which looks like a dive. So we should have got an indirect free kick. going out. And then the second challenge probably is a pen. So, but they miss the first, and then they give the second, and that just feels a bit tainted. Because I know we were sitting back to defend, but you play to your strengths, and they weren't getting past us at all. So there was an opportunity for us to go all the way and take it to penalties, and then who knows? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was the
So.
shame, I think, because like you say, definitely the first thing looks like simulation. The second one, there's a delay. I'm guessing the fourth official got involved or
I'm going
something.
to stop you there, Adam.
Go
Right,
on.
really important. I hate the word
But that's what
simulation.
they call it.
Let's call it what it is.
Well, cheating.
Call it what it is. Cheating. That's what it is. It's not simulation. That is just a rubbish word used by some Premier League stupid
All right,
people,
okay.
and it's not
So that
right.
means
It
we
is
lost two
what
games
it
through
is.
cheating,
It is cheating,
because the
Adam.
goalie
That's
knew
it.
it was over the line and he didn't tell anyone, so that's cheating. And this guy fell
Yeah.
over, cheated. Everyone's cheating. Unbelievable.
It's been cheating. So I mean, I think we could do the same old Womble's glossary. Simulation, cheating, low block, defending deep,
Whatever that is.
losing the ball, losing, the transition. That's just like you've lost the ball to the opposition. So, I think we need to let's bring back proper football
Hey, the only
descriptions.
actually the exciting thing that did happen on the Salford game was that obviously Reeves was back. That was cool.
Oh yes.
And
Yes.
he clearly had realised that I like it when people don't put the football in the D of the corner. And started fitting it right in, and he actually got told off by the ref. I've never seen anyone get told off by the ref, but the ref came over, moved it a little bit, and of course, as soon as the ref walks back, Reeves moved it again. So that was quite
Oh.
amusing. So I don't
Yeah,
know if that's
this is
cheating
this
or just like, I don't know. You have to get a plumb line and a shadow, and you'd have to do something with the sun and the moon to work out what's going on. So it's probably more complicated than that's probably a simulation, actually.
It's one of Adam's one of Adam's pet hates is people not putting the
Well,
ball in the corner
I just think it's funny,
triangle.
but I mean, I've given up on that. I've sort of going to give up on that season. I just like the fact that it might put the player off. This some
Yeah.
fool is telling them to.
Some random is shouting,
Yeah,
"Oi!"
exactly. Jackson, sort it
out, Jackson. Oh dear me. So anyhow, yeah, the Newcastle. I think one of the big things about the Newcastle, and I think this is a difficult one to be honest with you, is obviously, when the emergency with the pitch happened, and the fundraising thing went out, and again, Graham, amazing work, my friend. That, and we got the 15K in from Newcastle, and I think, I was the same. I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. The club have given this amount of money. It is a difficult one, because I think Newcastle fans are some of the most passionate, dedicated fans. I mean, like, it's a city club, isn't it? And like everyone there is black and white. Everyone there is Newcastle, and their fans are amazing. They absolutely love their football. And I can understand after a period of time of being like without having anything, that they get these owners in that are promising the world, and yet it just we have to remind ourselves that Newcastle now owned by a city state, misogynistic and homophobic. And I mean, I found these I found there's this group up, and I was noticing when all the Twitter stuff was going on, they're Newcastle fans against sports washing, set up by Andrew Page and John Heard. And I think it's incredibly brave when everyone is saying this is this direction, and you can stand up and go, wait a minute, and hold up a mirror to it. And I think these two guys and the Newcastle fans against sports washing, I think, is just an amazing thing. And I think I want to echo the wonderful rant that Nick Draper did for the 9 Years podcast about it as well. So,
The donation was a separate thing, and it's actually quite interesting. The donation obviously didn't go directly to the club, so that's that. I felt we were like, okay, But then obviously there's this other conversation about a special relationship and having them down to us and stuff. But it's a bit, it's all a bit weird. And it also feeds in, I suspect, to some of our discussion about the 50.01, actually, for me. But yeah, Niall, I'm sure he can tell us a lot more about why we should be a little bit upset about having any special relationship with Newcastle in the way that seems to the club and its owners.
You know, it's a really big difference that is between a special relationship with Newcastle fans and a special relationship with Newcastle United PLC. Newcastle United fans and some of their reactions was good to what's happened, and that's fine. But it doesn't mean that you can be a black and white Newcastle fan and have to accept everything that your owners do. So that's part of that group. And I think when you look at who the owners of Newcastle United are, and it's been proven in court now that it is basically Saudi Arabian government, that is a government that basically has got a record of killing journalists, that has got a record of providing bombs that have been dropped and killed thousands of civilians, that is routinely persecuting women. And ultimately, is that the kind of people that are right for owning a football club? Is that the kind of thing that becomes a role model for football? And for me, that's why it's disturbing. So for us to have a special relationship with Newcastle United fans, fine. For us to have a special relationship with Newcastle United PLC, not fine. Because that is not the kind of club ownership that anyone with any kind of sense of morality should really want to be endorsing. You know, ultimately, you're talking about people that, had they committed any of those offences in this country, would be criminals, and serious criminals.
I mean,
that's the issue.
Yeah, there's more. I mean, there's more stuff we want to. We won't linger on this for too much. I mean, it just feels a bit weird. And I know that. Yeah, they're not contributing so much to the city that they say they would. So it's, you know, it is tricky. And I think we're incredibly grateful to the football family and the fans of Newcastle for supporting us in a time of need. And, you know, that's been great. But maybe we just leave it there. Oh, dear. But yeah, I think you're right, though. It does. I mean, it does lead on to, well, it leads on to our situation regarding ownership and one thing. And I think reflecting back on the session we did last week with Chris and Charlie, one thing, and Niall, I want to come to you on this, is really about fair game. So the situation is, and I remember Chris saying this, that in actual fact, he doesn't want more money into the game; he wants more money out of the game. And the thought is that if there is a restructure of payments, it would probably lead to money being equally distributed through the league. So you would get X amount of money that would go into the championship, and that would be spread equally amongst the clubs, and the same for League One and the same for League Two, which would affect us. So it would mean that even though we might have an uplift of, I don't know, let's say £1 million, so would Bradford and Accrington and Morecambe or whoever, you know. So, but that's not what fair game is suggesting. Fair game, and now you can, you know, pick up on this. Fair game is saying that the money shouldn't be distributed like that. It should be distributed by how well run the club is. So in theory, a club that is run really well would get more money than a club that's run badly.
Yeah, that's entirely the reality. So, if we put this into context about before people say, oh, that will never happen, what we are looking at is a football governance bill that's due to go into Parliament in the next couple of weeks. And one of the big things is about how the football's financial distribution operates. And what we're looking at there is recent comments by the Labour Party that have said that distribution deal must adhere to a framework, which is a brand new phrase that's not really been used before, and that framework is the bit that opens the door to all the things we're talking about. So yes, there is a need to look at dealing with football's financial divides between the divisions, And I'll start with that saying that's really important, because if you don't tackle that, and they're getting wider, so the gaps between the Premier League and the Championship is getting significantly bigger. The biggest one of the biggest gaps is actually between the Championship and League One, and the other one is between League Two and the National League. So they're really big gaps, which basically means that teams that want to compete are basically having to increasingly overspend to move to the next level, which means you get a situation where now 58% of the clubs in the top 92 are technically insolvent, which means if their owner or benefactor was to walk away, that club would be bust overnight. Now, the argument has always been that if you start looking at trying to close those gaps, and that's obviously one of the first things you need to do to try and get rid of that culture of gambling, is that you give more money down to clubs and they'll just throw it all away on players' wages. So what you need to do is look at how do you encourage good behavior and look at doing that. There are certain measures that already exist that you can take into account, such as, technical insolvency is a really good one. Community engagement, fan engagement, they're really actually quite readily available, and how much reserves a club has. So if the money was switched off tomorrow, how long could that club survive for? Now, that's kind of your reserves. In most businesses, the kind of reason, the kind of expected norm is between 3 to 6 months worth of reserves to cover your costs. That's what's expected. That doesn't exist almost anywhere in football, to the extent that Nottingham Forest have, who are the worst case, have 5 hours worth of reserves. So, the owner switched off the clock, switched off the tap on Nottingham Forest at 9 o'clock, they'd be bust by two. That's the kind of situation we have. We at Wimbledon have significantly more reserves. We're in a gap between 3 to 6 months, so we're actually one of the few clubs that are actually run well. It doesn't reward us anything at the moment. It means nothing. And that actually, because of the way football is a gambling culture, that actually is a deterrent to our detriment, because we're not gambling, we're not living on the edge. And actually, the temptation must be to follow the kind of trend, and that is to blow all our kind of reserves, risk everything, and overspend and become technically insolvent, because that's where everybody else is at. So the only way you change that, and this is the argument we've been putting repeatedly to politicians, and it is getting significant traction, is that you start rewarding clubs that actually are well run, because that's ultimately what you want to see on and off the pitch, clubs that are financially sustainable. Because the examples of so many clubs that have run into crisis or problems is because of that financial gambling and that financial disparity that exists. So, in short, Fair Game advocates that there is a number of criteria which we already have put together with a load of financial experts and academics throughout the country that judge on how well a football club is run. And the clubs that score highly are the ones that should get more money, because that will encourage clubs to change the way they operate, and ultimately will make it a much more level playing field off the pitch, across the divisions, that will ultimately make it a much more level playing field on the pitch as well.
I guess the thought that, I mean, having a framework sounds great. I mean, and having the Fair Game framework sounds brilliant. I just wonder how realistic that is and what other options might be on the table regarding that framework and paying things out. Because I think I'm pretty sure the easiest option is to give money equally to clubs. And I've got a bad feeling that when things are easy and it seems like it's a good win, they would take that option rather than a more nuanced approach, which what you're suggesting. So I wonder how
So
realistic this is.
where this is going at the moment, Matt, is that what is on the table is potentially a new code of governance. And the code of governance and your licensing criteria for clubs includes you have to look at squad wage, squad is salary cap protocols. And that would actually put in that no club is allowed to spend more than 70% of its revenue on players' wages. Now, that is not policed at all. And so the idea is that that would be policed more effectively. Now, the difference between what is currently potentially on the table and what we're saying is that that is normally done as a penalty, and what we're looking at as it being a reward for good behaviour. Because frankly, those protocols have been kind of in place for quite a few years. Nobody abides by them. I mean, the championship, for example, which operates on a slightly different system, nearly every club spends more on its players' wages than it gets in revenue. So they're actually just basket cases when it comes to financial management, if I'm being really honest. And we need to change that. So the rules will be coming in place. They just need to be implemented more. And if we bring them into connecting them in with financial distribution, then you'll see chief financial officers at loads of clubs going, hold on, if I want us to be get more money from this central pot, then the easiest way to do it is by being not a financial numpty, which loads of clubs are. And that's what we're trying to look to move away from.
I genuinely hope that financial numpty is going to be one of the things that stops people getting funding.
I've used that phrase in Parliament,
That's brilliant.
in Westminster. I've said you do realise that these are all a bunch of financial numpties, and I think that's important that it gets through on all my kind of high level political conversations I've been having with the DCMS and with ministers, because reality, that's what they are. It's people who are just don't
Adam.
really care about what a football club is about. They don't care about the history and the traditions because they're playing Russian roulette.
I obviously agree with everything that Niall is saying, but I wonder, some of the counter argument is about the idea that the Premier League is the best league in the world. The players come to this league because of the amount of money they can get paid. I guess at some point you're effectively asking for every single player in the Premier League to get a pay cut of some description. With all that in mind, it's all good business practice. But how? So then the argument is that people say, well, that would damage the Premier League. So I wondered if you could talk a bit about that in terms of like how does that compare with other leagues? Is that a possibility? Will there be a readjustment? Would it actually benefit in the long term because we will have a better grassroots? I've got my thoughts, but I don't know enough about it.
Okay, so at the moment, the Premier League is between 2 and 2.5 times more than the next league in the world, which is La Liga. So the gap is huge, right? And the amounts we're talking about are not exactly huge. So just on the if you the abolition of the parachute payments would be make a phenomenal difference to the rest of the football pyramid. One parachute payment, and each year there can be up to nine. When it's very rarely there's nine, normally it's about six, and that's a
Still a
club's
lot.
receiving between 50 and 30 million pounds for having the got relegated in the last 3 years. That's basically what happens. If you got rid of one of those, that's 50 million quid. That's more than the current distribution deal gives to all the clubs in League One, League Two, National League North, and National League South put together. That's just one of those payments. So one payment worth more than what's that? 120 clubs. So one club, the amount they get is given to 120 clubs. So imagine if you said, right, we're going to get rid of just one of those parachute payments and we'll double the amount of money all those 120 clubs get at the moment from the distribution deal. That's has no effect on the 20 clubs in the Premier League because it's parachute payment. And if they remember up, there's six of those. So imagine what you did if you got rid of parachute payments. So you're not even touching the revenue of the Premier League. That makes a significant difference. And obviously, I would argue actually that one of the problems is you need to actually look at how much the Premier League gets and distribute it, some of that down anyway. I think that's fundamentally important because if you start making sure that some of the money is ring-fenced, which is another thing that can be added to a distribution deal and would be another parameter, and you say it was ring-fenced towards academy, community projects, paying for updated stadia, making stadium more of a community asset, all of those sort of things, which makes all the research points, all of that makes a football club more financially sustainable. That makes a huge difference. Not only does it make those clubs more sustainable, it makes those clubs hubs of the community, which means that the growth of popularity of that club of football generally becomes better. Your academies become better, so the quality of players coming through comes better. So if you've got more people who can access and get involved in a football club, remember Premier League's basically unaffordable for what 90, 95% of the population now. So that's your touch point into football. You've got people who'll be able to play football on a better level. That is good for the national game, which actually will help the sport grow and become stronger over time. That's what's really beneficial. And I think that's where we can see a real significant difference to success, ultimately, of the national team. That's what it does if you start looking at changing the way football is funded and how much that money is kept amongst those 20 billionaires of the Premier League, which is what we're talking about. Because the Premier League exists for the 20 billionaire owners. It doesn't exist for anyone else. It doesn't exist for AFC Wimbledon. Doesn't exist for, anything. And yet they pull all the strings when it comes to football's finances and who success the success of it, the academies, the community programs, the investment of all the clubs, all controlled by the Premier League.
I
And
just,
their remit isn't for us.
I think, yeah, no, and listen, I think we're all agreed that, if there was a framework and a different way of that the money was distributed, I think would be ideal. And hopefully, Lisa Nandy and the people at the DCMS are taking this on board and coming up with a better way. And I mean, like, on the very least, one hopes that they're going to abolish the, parachute payments. I think that is the big thing. So clubs, who are in threat of being relegated have got a contingency in place. I think, I mean, one of the things, I guess, because the index came out earlier this year, didn't it? Not that long ago, the league table.
Yeah, it came out in July. In
Yeah,
well, in August, sorry, August the
in
22nd.
August. Yeah, I guess your thinking is now that. Maybe in the future you wouldn't be doing an index like this because, obviously, people looking at it, I mean, it's interesting about who's the top two in that national index.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK,
Yeah.
the people, the two clubs that came out really well were clubs that were PLC clubs, clubs that were listed on the stock exchange. And that's because a lot of it was about good governance. So we've looked at that and thought, right, well, okay, that's because they're transparent. Doesn't necessarily mean they're well run, but it means they're transparent and people know that they can be held to account. Now, what you move towards, if you move towards a structure where that transparency and that accountability exists at all clubs, and a lot of that data is held internally and not actually shared, then you'll see a very different set of clubs at the top. Because at the moment, there is this kind of culture of lack of transparency, lack of accountability, financial gambling. I mean, this is just an industry that would be like, you took any of that kind of behavior and you put it in any other sector, they'd be going, like, what the hell are you doing? That's the reality. It's so far removed from so many other sectors. I mean, like, got everything from banking to insurance to fruit and veg, right? All of those sectors are far better regulated and controlled and, care about the people that it's supposed to serve than the football.
I guess the other, but would you be looking at, because I think transparency is one thing, which I think is a really good thing. Is there other things you would like to see strengthened that would make additions to it? Because I guess there is thing about fan engagement. I think is probably one of, from an AFC Wimbledon point of view, that is a big thing about how much. Say fans have at that at those particular clubs.
So what's interesting is, again, if you look at the clubs that scored well on good governance and transparency, if you move away from PLC clubs, then the clubs that do well are fan-owned,
Yeah. So
because
it's
actually
so
the
so the reason
accountability,
the
there's a
reason
need for
that
accountability. Yes, so
sorry
that
the
if you
reason
move
some of the
towards, sorry, Matt, go on.
carry sorry I'm just saying the reason that if the in the fan index the reason that those the clubs near the top of it are doing well is because they're PLCs and are on the stock market, basically. You can see them that way, but they might not necessarily have the best fan representation or fan engagement.
No, totally. Because the Fair Game Index has four strands. It's good governance, fan engagement, fan and community engagement, sorry, EG&I, and equality standards, right? So you can score well on good governance, but you could be shit at fan and community engagement, which was actually very much the case with Spurs, for example, who did well. Fan and community engagement wasn't actually that great. So obviously, we're looking at that and trying to look at that becoming more important because, again, that's about the long-term sustainability of a football club.
Yeah.
the more engaged you are with your fans, the more likely they are to want to be connected with that club. And that you want the deep relationship with a fan rather than the shallow relationship with a fan, because a shallow relationship with a fan means when things go wrong, they're gone. Whereas, a deeper relationship means that in times of crisis or in times of like things like that, they're more likely to stick with you and they're more likely to feel connection with that club and feel like they're proud of what that club stands for, even if the results aren't quite as great as they could be.
Yeah, cool. Well, I mean, I think all of our hope is that, that the funding is distributed more fairly, and if it's distributed alongside a decent framework, that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, and that's the bit that I think is really important for, our listener and
Yeah.
the other people who reach out to this to kind of get involved and get behind, because we are looking at a moment in time where this is realistically something that could happen, and it won't
Yeah.
happen. We won't have that chance again. We won't have the chance to redraw and take away that power of the Premier League, who look after the 20 billionaires of the owners of the Premier League, and give it to an organization that tries to look after the entire football pyramid and care about what is to make sure those clubs are financially sustainable, and the history and traditions and fans of all those clubs are respected. Because at the moment, neither of those things are true.
So I guess I was going to
Yeah.
say with that, Niall, and I think maybe this will lead us on just to reflect briefly on what we talked about last week as well, is that if you start to do that kind of stuff you've talked about, which it brings that deeper engagement, not just with the fans, but with the community, all that kind of stuff, that the football asset becomes way more than just the business of football on a Saturday, because it's doing things for its community, it's working locally, it's keeping people healthy, fit, all that kind of good stuff, and it's expanding and supporting local business, which I'm guessing then it does become a community asset, which in theory would attract better owners, which in theory would also kind of possibly mean that actually you do take money out, because it's about the money gets distributed outside of football, in fact, even more so, because you have a better owner who's thinking about the infrastructure of that space and getting well rewarded, not just for being a PLC, but for all those other more positive metrics. But that, I mean, we would obviously get what I think we'd get from some of our fans, some other fans, is that's a really idealistic position to put to centre football around, which I think we probably all do subscribe to. So obviously,
I think, Adam,
go on.
the big thing with that is it's about whether you're a short-termist or a medium and long-termist. If you're a short-termist, then looking at what's going to be about what's going to benefit the community, what's going to make you like your local area more connected with that club, I mean, that takes a while to develop and to really embed. And I got a lot of respect for some of the marketing that's been going on with Outer Swimlands. You can look at the fact that our ground's full all the time, and that's got a lot to do with the work they're doing. But most clubs don't think like that, wouldn't put that as a priority. They would put, we've got an injury crisis, therefore I need to up my wages for my third choice left back so that they, get a better third choice left back in or whatever, or, pay more wages so I can get that. And oh, well, if that means I'm cutting my backroom staff, my marketing staff, my turnstile operators, the kind of, all the kind of stuff like that, that for them is the choice they make, or a community program, or the amount of money we do to outreach on certain things. And all of that goes, which is
Let
detrimental
me
for the
ask.
long term.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think so. For me, this comes back to this point of if all of what you're talking about encourages better owners, I can't think of better owners than the fans. Okay. And so if we reflect back on the 50.01 or whatever and where we're at, why are we not? And this is my position on this, that I'll ask you guys, why are we not making that fan ownership thing non-negotiable at this point? Because if we're looking at the long term, we should make that non-negotiable. If I felt that that wasn't non-negotiable, and that in, my daughter's grandchildren or whatever, if the planet still exists at that point, suddenly find out that their club is now, it's fine for it to be owned by a state nation that does really horrible things. That's not. They're not going to follow. They're going to step away. We'll be dead, spinning in our grave, stepping away. Like that, I don't understand why we're not thinking, if we want better owners, the best owners for football clubs are the fans. If the fans understand that's about community engagement, about all the good things that we know football does, and is a well-run business that supports all of that, why is anyone saying that we should not make 50.01, if that's what's considered fan ownership for the majority, which I'm falling towards now, as it's done, it's non-negotiable. I don't care what happens in the future. As long as we run ourselves well, which we should do, why would we ever have another lever, as they keep calling it, to pull to go to bad or potentially not as good owners? Because the best owners are the fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Adam, I agree with you on this. And I think there's some things that we need to be really clear about, which have been a bit muddied. So the 50.01, my understanding on this, and this is important for people to understand, is if that happened, we are not selling straight away. So that is not, it's not like we are suddenly going out all guns blazing to get, you know, that extra. I think it's probably about 30%, something like that. Is that we wouldn't be going out and getting and trying to get that out, trying to get all of that sold. That isn't the thing. The thing is, if we get to a situation where we can't pay back some bonds, or we can't do, you know, financially we're in a problem, we have got that option to go down to 15.01. So it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen immediately if it does happen. So I guess Chris's argument was that is now the right time to be doing that. And, you know, Graham, who Pricer we interviewed a couple of weeks ago, and Charlie, their argument would be, if we do it now, then by the time we get to, you know, a situation in 2027, I think is the big issue regarding paying back bonds, we're ready. So we can foresee where a problem is, and we're ready to
jump onto that bit, Matthew, because for me, like, I still think I feel like that's a red herring in terms of the way it keeps getting pitched. What I'm semi interested in is that if 50.01 continues to make sure that we're fan owned, and let's forget about whether we make that non-negotiable, but that's what we should do. If you know, will that, the potential that does is that it might invite investors to invest in the space, the community, and all that kind of asset, because they have those bigger options. And I know we haven't been able to sell what we've got currently, but things like the USP of what we've got, it could, if we actually went and said, well, there is more that you can invest in, but the USP is about the fan ownership, it's all that kind of stuff. I mean, you take whatever we think of Newcastle PLC, that 15 grand that they gave towards the donations, that would never have come to us if we weren't fan owned. However it came to us, there's no way. And whether they've decided that was because they want to do sports washing and look like the good guys, you know, whatever, that's up to them. You know, there's no way.
Also, I think the one thing probably on that particular bit of donation is, I would assume that there was someone lower down in the club who made that deal. I don't think that was made by, you know, the owners. I think I don't even think it's made by Amanda Starr. I'd have thought that was signed off at a lower level, because there's probably someone lower down who can make that.
Well, it'd be the marketing department.
Yeah. So someone else, well, someone who can make that decision.
Yeah, it'd be, so for marketing spend. Yeah. Absolutely, they'd have looked at it and thought, this is 15 grand's worth of good publicity.
All right. Okay. We.
And so just to loop all that together, and I wouldn't mind Niall coming in as well to talk about this, because so the other thing is, like, everyone says, oh, we've got like PTSD or, you know, which some of us, I don't think that's the right term, actually, to be fair, because I think that's a horrible thing that people really do suffer with. And I don't feel that that's what we have. So I'm just going to kind of back away from that as a term. But we were burnt in terms of what happened. And, you know, if you were to follow through what happened, we had a really badly run business that was Wimbledon Football Club that got into lots of trouble, that done some dodgy deals to figure some stuff out, and came up with this unique solution to a unique problem, shoved it down the road. and only within only this and this season it's been sold, you know, sold to a completely interesting set of individuals and people. And if any of us had thought, well, if any of us fell for Koppel's nonsense or whatever, and decided that the unique solution was the thing, which no one, why would it? Like, now they've completely been sold down the river to some other random owner who knows what their business is. So, which all loops back to is, why aren't we not, if we're going to go and be, why don't we just sort this out and just to be, we should be fan owned. And it's not just, I know there's other fan owned clubs, but our story is unique because of that. We aren't just fan owned. We didn't buy back some shares or whatever. We're fan owned because we started from zero. And that whole piece, you'd lose that the instant that we become not fan owned. It's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that anyone we've spoken to over the last couple of weeks wants us to go to not be fan owned. I think that is how, as Niall, you've said it many times, it's our USP. And I think it's interesting why we wouldn't have a special resolution that would say you had to get 90% or over in a vote to change that. The people are saying that, you know, you wouldn't want that. And I think all of us are here again. Well, I think that does secure fan ownership if you have that special resolution, because you've got to get over 90% to change it. And I think the day that we go under 50%, if that ever happened, I think would be an awful day. And it would mean that we've mismanaged it. And you'd lose a lot of opportunities. So, yeah, I mean, I think looking back on it, what we understand is that people generally want to stay fan owned. People want to get down to this 50.01 so that they're prepared for if something happens in 2027. Whether this is or is not the right time, I'm not sure. But that's the reason why we're doing this thing now, so that we are prepared if there's a financial problem. But going under 50%, then we have a problem, because it's not about who. And as everyone says, it's not about who owns the club next. It's about who owns the club after that. That is the issue that we've got. And you've seen it time and time again with clubs up and down the country where they sell it on to someone who's got the best interests at heart, and then it goes wrong. I mean, Niall, you'll know this more than me, that I think Charlton is a good example, isn't it? Where I think when they were kind of fan owned, and they went to there were owners who bought in who were like Charlton fans, and then that didn't work out, and then it went somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of thing has happened a lot of times.
Yeah,
where people have trusted that one owner. Reading's another example.
Yeah,
you know, and it's who that money was, who that club was sold on to, that becomes the problem. So, yeah, I mean, I would suspect that, you know, the people that are next to invest in the club probably will be fans or like people who kind of, you know, love that, but they might not have as deep a connection as the rest of us do, and they'll go, well, okay, well, somebody else has come along, and they happen to be, I don't know, a Lebanese property developer, for yeah. example, that might want to come in and say, right, well, actually, they're in a really swanky part of London. I can make a load of money out of that, and you know, flog that ground, and you know, move to something else. I mean, you know, there's a whole risk in that kind of element that worries me. And you know, and weirdly, the other thing that I'm doing with Fair Game quite a lot is to try and make that route really hard through governance. So there, I think what is interesting about when we talk about 50.01 or whatever, is that I'm massively pro making sure that, I use the word, and I didn't use it, I haven't used it for a while since I was, God, elected into the Don's Trust years ago, enshrinement. So I think that is actually quite important, a phrase to think about, because with this new set of rules, if they don't come into play, then everything's open. And remember that there will be some real big, nasty lawyers out there that will try and make sure that it doesn't come to fruition and that these things don't happen. So I think we need to do all the best we can is to protect what our club really is about. You know, I'd like to see all of this put into the Articles of Association of all the various elements of the club. I'd like to see it in 90% minimum, in all of that sort of stuff. And it should be just written throughout all of our kind of constitution, everything we do and discuss. And I think that's really important because, you know, the amount of money Dubs raised, Graham Stacey raised on that fundraiser, there is no way, and Graham, we love you, but there is no way we'd have got £120,000 if we weren't the club that we are with our story and our history and our USP. No way, because you know, there is a special kind of magic connected with what we stand for. I still don't think we've ever marketed that more as effectively as we could do. And I hope that we've got a new head of comms at the club that hopefully, you know, they're willing to kind of really push that forward and say, right, well, that's the bit that's going to make this club, you know, different and unique and bring in loads more people that want to invest in that story, as a sponsor, as a kind of donator, as a fan. Because I think we can do that, and I think that's the right route for AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah. I mean, I know now you've spoken about that a lot about it not being marketed as well as it as well as it as well as it could. Yes, yeah, it's interesting, and I think enshrinement is certainly something that we all believe in here, and I think going, you know, and having a resolution where it's over 90% is something that we in the same old Wombles would want to see. And even though,
It makes it really tricky at this point to make decisions because I don't want to keep, like I said, I don't want to keep having this conversation, and I think it makes it tricky to for me to even decide what I want to do at the next set of stuff until we've got it secure and just tell we need to everyone needs to put their money where their mouth is and say this is what we do, and it's you we're not going to go below that, you know.
Right, okay, well, chaps, I think I'm pretty sure that today has been our most woke podcast yet. It's been brilliant. We've stood up against a regime, and already I'm looking forward to moving house. They can't find me. You know, we've discussed fair game and how that's gonna change our
We're just down the
finances.
road, by the way, just round the corner from
I
where I am.
don't no, shush now.
Over there.
And then yeah, we've worked out, you know, what it is we want to do with this 50 plus. I mean, I think all of us are agreed, you know, maybe less of a problem as long as it's enshrined that we're a fan-owned club, which is what we believe in. The big thing to end on is the game on Saturday, is the fact that miraculously, and it does seem miraculously, having looked at the state of the pitch. And now you were at the ground recently and you were having a look at it as well. The fact that it's actually going to be playable for the Carlisle game, it's going to be immense. And I'm really hoping it is going to be absolutely chocker there. How fantastic. What a great work this club has done in sorting that out. You're going to be there, Adam. You're going to be there, Noel?
Yeah,
I'll say I mean, I think I just worry about that pitch, like cutting up in that corner. Everybody's gonna be thinking, please, please let it be nice and smooth down that corner. We'll see.
I think it's been called the Miles Hippolyte corner.
That's gonna be the fanciest park. It's gonna be brand new. They're gonna be moving so quick in that space. It's gonna be awesome.
I'm looking forward to seeing some pictures come out this week. But anyhow, there you are, dear listener, our most woke podcast yet. I'm so excited by it. We've done really well, we'll be joined by other people to come in the future, but I think it was important for us to reflect on what's happened over the last week or so. Thank you very, very much to Adam Proctor and to Monfrere Niall Cooper. We are the same old Wombles. We're back.